So the symbols may not be revealed. The symbols of these charts, which are offered to the adept, not revealed, but indicate the point of spiritual consciousness, not just soul consciousness or even divine consciousness achieved, but probably triadal consciousness. And the but it'd have to go beyond that too if we're dealing with adepts and those who are beyond the phase of the adept. The point of spiritual consciousness achieved and the responsiveness of the initiate to these major cosmic influences. Well, we know that until the third initiation is taken, there's not going to be much responsiveness at all to stars like Sirius. And I suppose we would have to class the Pleiades as a whole and also the Great Bear as a whole. Perhaps we know that people do respond to the stars, but in a lower way, strictly from the manifestational point of view. And as Alcyone is considered to be the star of the individual, maybe before the third initiation there is some level of response. But in general, the first initiation, which is the solar initiation, is the third. And it's there that stars, as stellar bodies, as solar bodies, really begin to come into their own nature with respect to the human being, or begin to demonstrate their true solar nature with respect to the human being. So it's fitting that the third degree be the point at which stars, as a whole, begin to be of real import. You kind of wonder, when is it that constellations as a whole begin to demonstrate their true nature, not the nature that we usually deal with? You might wonder if the fifth degree constellations themselves begin to demonstrate their truer nature in terms of their influence upon the master. You begin to wonder whether seven constellations together might not begin to demonstrate a truer nature when it comes to the seventh degree initiate. These are speculations, of course, but we're dealing with ever ascending wholes, and the effect of the parts and the wholes and still greater wholes upon the human being, the advancing human being, and of course upon the planet. So, you know, the implications are many, really. And of course we speculate, and we have no assurance that these speculations are correct, but they do exercise the mind and perhaps expand its intuitive powers, and one day the truth or falsity of such speculations can be confirmed. Excuse me. A glance at these geometrical charts will indicate in a moment the status of the initiate and also the point towards which he is striving. So they will indicate the initiatory point or objective of striving. But remember, we are beginning with the fifth initiation, because these charts are useful in the case of the adept or beyond. So certainly astrology has a utility beyond the level of mastership. And this is quite an extraordinary realization, I think. Okay, good. Now, where are we here? These charts are fourth dimensional in nature and not flat surfaces as are our charts. So we know that the chakras at various initiations, begin to turn fourth dimensionally. And so whatever fourth dimensional perception will mean here, there's probably some kind of interpenetration going on. So there must be specific ways of reading these charts which are not customary to us. And perhaps, you know, and those of us who are interested in astrology, maybe we are learning something more about such charts on the inner planes at night. But it's difficult to bring this kind of information through. And besides, if the charts really are those of adepts and beyond, they only have a kind of a passing peripheral significance to our own case. He says, this is an interesting piece of information, but of no value, except insofar as it indicates synthesis, the fusion of spirit, soul, and body, and the point of development. Just an indication. It shows that the factor of synthesis does continue beyond adeptship. There are always new integrations to be made. Integration with the monad and with still higher groups within the globe lords and chain lords and the scheme lord. Always greater wholes will invite the participation of the monad. Okay, so we realize the extensive utility of astrology and how the process of the initiate is indicated by the geometrizing of the types of charts used. And, you know, being able to read the point of evolution astrologically is an astonishing possibility. DK says, it also proves the fact that God geometrizes where the soul is concerned. The second aspect is the great geometrician, the second ray, and the soul is of the second aspect. So with respect to consciousness, God geometrizes where the soul is concerned. And these charts are most interesting. Obviously, DK is having the opportunity himself to read such charts. But when he wants to know the status of one of his disciples, I don't think he has to resort to such charts, although he may see in embryo a tendency towards the interrelation between squares or form or matter, stars or consciousness and manifestation, and spirit, where it is relevant. It might be possible to look at our own astrological charts and complete some triangles where they don't exist, complete some stars where they are partially formed, and complete the squares. You know, if we have a T-square in our chart, it's most interesting to look at the point opposite the short leg of the T-square, which would complete the Grand Cross, and see what our opportunity for synthesis in form may be. So far as we're reading these charts without true knowledge of the soul who is concerned, we are obviously reading at a fairly superficial level. So often it's the case of how the personality can align with the spiritual influences, and how soul influences can be conducted through the personality mechanism. But we're talking about beings here who have far transcended personality and even the limitations of what we call the soul on the higher mental plane. They have transcended that, though they have not necessarily transcended ego, higher ego, on the triadal levels, because there are initiations being given on those levels, quite high initiations, depending on the perspective. Sometimes the fifth initiation is associated with the atmic plane, but also sometimes with the Buddhic plane. So the hierarchy has its own type of astrology, most definitely. The relation of Leo to Cancer through Neptune has already been touched upon and is, of course, apparent to you if you have the slightest understanding of the consciousness aspect of evolution. Well, the sensitive consciousness of Neptune leads to the self-consciousness of Leo. Sensitive desire, consciousness of Neptune in Cancer leads to the self-consciousness. Oh, how do we do that? SF. That's not working. Self-consciousness of Leo. And, you know, Cancer is mass consciousness and leads into the focused individual consciousness of Leo. Of course, he's not really emphasizing here the heart of the sun factor, which the veiled Neptune, the veiled Neptune veiled by the sun, offers the developing initiate. This Neptune is not only connected with the solar plexus. It's obvious that since it is the planet in which the sun stores its fires, as it were, its solar fires, it has to do with the heart center very much, even though it's not one of the planets given for the heart center. Jupiter and the sun are, in a certain sense, at the second initiation, Neptune is, or should be, I think, connected with the heart center, the fires, the solar fires of the heart. So if we have the slightest understanding of consciousness aspect of evolution, we will realize how mass consciousness, which is sensitive, pervasive, and perhaps without individual boundaries, gives way to a higher type of individual consciousness and eventually to a kind of group consciousness where all the different soul centers are connected through solar fire. Right. Want to close this off if I possibly can. Just taking a moment here. One day maybe all this will be edited and the nonsense will be removed. All right. There is, first of all, the mass consciousness. I guess he's going to say what I was trying to say here. There's the mass consciousness. Then the consciousness of the dramatic isolated self, which is very solar in a way. One is reminded of the Louis XIV, the Sun King, who actually was a Scorpio, it turns out, with lots of Virgo, but he had, I think, the Moon and Venus in the sign Leo. And this gave him, perhaps, his flamboyant nature. The consciousness of the dramatic, isolated self, and finally, again, group consciousness, where Neptune comes into play, because Neptune is the planet which breaks down the barriers between the isolated egos. Finally, group consciousness, which is, in reality, the highest forms of group consciousness and individual consciousness combined together in service of the plan. So the sense of individuality, of a related individuality, is sustained. The sense of a related individuality is sustained. It's a bit like buddhi manas, you know, we don't go fully into buddhi and forget manas. We sustain our monastic capacity, but it's infused by buddhi. We sustain our individual consciousness, but it is not no longer a separative individual consciousness. It's the second stage of Leo. It is I am that, not just that I am alone and isolated. That's a bit more like Saturn in Leo, but Neptune in relation to Leo brings the formerly isolated individual into harmonious, unitive rapport with others of his kind. So reflect on this definition, for it will stimulate you to understanding. So he says, group consciousness is the highest, which is in reality, the highest forms of group consciousness. And finally, again, group consciousness, which is in reality, the highest forms of group consciousness and individual consciousness combined together in the service of the plan. We are both the point and we are the circle, and we cannot relinquish the point. The final stage of Leo is called the relinquished point, but in a way the point is then found everywhere. God being what? An intelligible circle or sphere whose center is everywhere and whose circumference is nowhere. This is a great definition, I think, by Pascal, who was both a mathematician, a philosopher, and a mystic, apparently. So, an excellent definition here of group consciousness, including the soul aspect of group consciousness and also individual consciousness. Every master is still, in a way, an individual and is individually responsible and has a certain equipment built up over millions and millions of years. This edifice is not abrogated. This edifice is sustained, though infused, by the presence of the group, who are in a way other selves, other parts of his self. Leo is so interesting for the different levels of selfhood which it is suggesting. The isolated individual self, the self unified with the group and in harmony with the group, and finally the one self, I am that I am, or I am that and that am I. The one self, and yet still within it, the unification is understood, and still within it, the condensations of individual selfhood are also still understood. It's not that the master enters into a state which is a mystical blur of distinction. Synthesis is articulated, and yet synthesis prevails. So the real synthesis is an articulated synthesis. The many factors can still be dealt with as apparently distinct in consciousness, and yet they are all interfused by substance, by self, by synthesis, by essence, by the one, by the fact, whatever you want to call it. Suchness is the all-pervasive substance of every apparently distinct factor in the consciousness of the universal logos. So the peculiar significance of Leo in the general evolution of consciousness, particularly in the human family, is determined by the control of what? Of those two mysterious planets, Uranus and Neptune. Now, interesting. You may remember in one of our charts here, which I should always keep out before beginning these programs, that Uranus and Uranus and Neptune are the two most elevated of the synthesizing planets. The many other planets seem to cluster around Saturn, even though we are told that Mercury is bound to be absorbed by Uranus and Venus by Neptune. But you kind of wonder whether they aren't, in a sense, absorbed by Saturn first. This has still to be established, but one day Saturn itself must be absorbed, and maybe different aspects of it absorbed into one or other of the two major synthesizing planets. These are speculations, but the speculations are meant to, you know, promote the sparking of electricity between different contents of consciousness, perhaps under the influence of an idea. Okay, so it's determined by the control of those two mysterious planets, Uranus and Neptune. Not very highly unfolded, but extremely highly developed, if you know the distinction there. They are great beings, but they have not yet unfolded their nature to any great extent, because they represent the higher centers. And just as it is in the human being, the lower centers unfold first, even though they are lower in nature than the higher centers. So in the man who is ready for initiation, you have therefore a dual control, that is the sun itself, and also the sun as it veils the influences of these two planets, or rather as it focuses them and transmits them with intensity. Well, veiling, you know, at first it may be real veil. By real veil I would mean that because the ahamkara, or the sense of I-ness, is so strong in a solar sense, you just don't get much of the transcendental energies of Neptune and Uranus. But as the ahamkara dissipates, and as selfhood expands itself to include the group and eventually the one, then indeed the sun can be said to focus and transmit the energies of Neptune and Uranus with intensity. I mean, in a way, these two planets and any planets are part of the sun, part of the chakra system of the sun. And if the chakras emanate from the monadic level, ultimately, as it seems to say in Cosmic Fire, I think, could go off on a goose chase here, you know. But it seems to say that in Cosmic Fire, it's 169, if I'm correct. Let's lay that out a bit. The view is hidden, and the zoom is bigger, so we can see more. So if we went to a treatise on Cosmic Fire, and we went about to 169, maybe we're going to have to go a little earlier. It might be 166. Bodies of Fire, 166, 167. These centers are formed entirely of streams of force pouring from the ego, who transmits it from the monad. Indeed, from the monad. That's the important statement, isn't it? Transmitted from the monad. So I want to, in a way, underline that as much as one can here in the, at least one can put highlight in it. So the centers are formed of the streams of force coming down from the ego, but first through the monad, monad through the ego, and then into the different chakras. But if there are chakras above the ego, which I do believe there are, then the monad would be responsible for them particularly. So that's page 166, where that's found, of Cosmic Fire. So the difference between veiling and transmitting with intensity the rays of particular planets is very distinct. and it has to do with the stage of evolution at which we find ourselves. All right. This produces the following developments. One, the sun. Full self-consciousness. Well, okay, how full? This through the influence of the physical sun and the heart of the sun produces awareness of the relation of the higher self and the lower self. Man becomes aware of his essential duality, and in this particular case, this type of sun represents soul infusion, higher self infusing the lower self. But of course, that's, you know, what is the self and how full is this type of self-consciousness? Eventually, the sun could be a triple sun and could represent monad, soul, and personality. But anyway, full self-consciousness, fully aware of one's personality vehicles, of one's soul vehicle, and eventually fully aware of what one is as a monad, I would say. Now, Uranus, which is a very, in a way, mental planet, as well as a planet of will, occult consciousness, or that intelligent fusing condition, which produces the scientific at-one-ment, not the mystical at-one-ment, but the scientific at-one-ment of the two factors, higher and lower self, through the intelligent, occultly intelligent use of the mind. So Uranus fusing higher self and lower self through occult intelligence. Here we have the intelligence not as a discriminating separative factor, but as a linking factor. We know how much seventh ray there is in Uranus, and we know of the fifth ray, we say three minds unite. And when you look at some of the names of the fifth ray lord, there is a uniting power to this ray in a higher sense. Fifth ray is much concerned with Uranus, perhaps its mental nature. Perhaps the third ray, the harmonizing power of the third ray. Yes, harmonizing for the third ray, he tells us, in the early 600s of Cosmic Fire. Linking the higher self and the lower self. So, but what do we mean by higher self? Or maybe we mean the higher ego, which is the spiritual triad itself, linked via the Antikarana to the lower triad. And if Mercury rules the Antikarana, then the higher octave of Mercury, which is Uranus, has to be involved with that Antikarana as well. And so the fusing and blending power of the higher ego or triad and the lower ego may be officiated over by Uranus. Occult consciousness, a consciousness of the factors on these higher planes in all distinctness, not just in a condition of mystical union. We're having a little bit of what I call here white noise in the background, so I hope that's not making us fade out in any sense. Neptune is mystical consciousness, but DK talks about identification. It's a very high state, and Neptune is involved in that through realization, through esoteric experience, and through that mysterious oneness of all life over which Neptune presides. So here, you know, up here when we're dealing with Uranus, it's around the time of the third initiation. When we're dealing with Neptune and the mystical consciousness, perhaps more with the second initiation, but not to eliminate the kinds of identification which can occur as we rise to the fourth initiation and beyond. Neptune, mystical consciousness, or that innate sensitivity which leads unerringly to the higher vision, the vision of the triad, I suppose, to the recognition of the interrelation involved in man's essential duality, that interplay between the higher self and the lower self, a man's essential duality during the process of manifestation, plus the activity of the mediator. How interesting, Neptune as the mediator. Oftentimes it's Mercury, which is the mediator. Here, you know, the intuitive mind of Mercury has, in a sense, a higher correspondence in Neptune. Even though we think of Neptune as the higher octave of Venus, Mercury is the mediator. Mercury represents the Buddhic plane. Neptune represents the Buddhic plane. They are closely related, just the way Uranus and Mercury are, but in a more occult sense for Uranus and Mercury. Maybe more related to atmic mind with Uranus and Mercury. Neptune, mystical consciousness, or that innate sensitivity which leads unerringly to the higher vision, and it's an inclusive vision through sensitivity. Inclusive vision through sensitivity. The feeling of the divine whole. Let's just say maybe Uranus, whoops, that won't do. Maybe Uranus is the realization of the, not divine will, of the divine whole. Sometimes these autocorrects get ahead of me here a bit. So, to the recognition of the interrelation involved in man's essential duality during the process of meditation, and it's the feeling, see Neptune, the great planet of sensitivity, the feeling of the relationship between the soul and personality, or between the higher ego triad and soul-infused personality. So Neptune is contact. It's the sense of touch. And Uranus is more related to sight. Mercury has much to do with sight, and Uranus being the higher octave. Saturn more with the sense of hearing. Although sometimes Saturn and Mercury seem to be interchangeable, just as they are when you look at the two rulers of Aquarius, they both apply. There's the Saturnian rulership of Aquarius, and some Aquarians are very Saturnian, and others are more of the Uranian type. How that all works out in precision, we have yet to know, but at least in terms of manifestation, it can be noted. You have, therefore, the conscious integrated self, I suppose that is the sun, right? The sun, functioning with full occult knowledge, and that's Uranus, and also mystical perception of wholeness, of, you know, oneness, the feeling of mystical unity. When the influences of Leo, focused through the Sun, Uranus, and Neptune, have been carried adequately forward in the life of the advanced disciple. Now, what is an advanced disciple? I dare say it's going to, you know, in this particular context, beyond the third degree, I would say. Beyond the third degree. Because after all, Uranus, as veiled by the sun, comes in particularly at the third degree when it's possible to fuse via the antikarana aspects of the spiritual triad with the soul infused personality. Now, maybe some of us have inklings of what all this is about. I mean, when we first start our soul infusion, the sun is perhaps an adequate symbol, and Venus, a kind of lesser sun, is involved, and we have the very first part of the antikarana leading to the sense of the soul as the great sunflower and globe of light and love on the higher mental plane. But then when we start getting into the antikaranic aspect of the fusion, then Uranus and Neptune are needed, and therefore higher aspects of the sun. The sun can never be less than Uranus or Neptune, never. But higher aspects of the sun are involved. The I am that aspect of the sun with Uranus, and perhaps the I am that I am, what did I say, with Neptune. I am that perhaps with Neptune, or I am that I am with Uranus, although there are ways in which one can reverse those, because you might wonder whether Neptune is not ultimately in this secondary solar system the most powerful of all the planets, being monadically on the second ray. Well, this is one of the reasons why Leo is a sign of such paramount, on top of the mountain, paramount importance, certainly to humanity. You know, remember the, what do we call it, most human of all the signs, and why the intelligent Leo subject, yes, at least that, and he becomes intelligent through the fifth ray dispersed by Leo, can usually attain his goal once he accurately perceives that objective. So there's great willpower here and great intelligence. The, let's see, how do we put it? The first ray and the fifth ray. Willpower and intelligence, and also great consciousness as the particular fire sign which is most related to consciousness. These are all involved. Consciousness of the integrated self. An I that is more than the isolated individual, but the I that is we. We begin to perceive that, or at least the higher power, the higher self begins to come in, and the essential duality of man begins to be understood by the Leo subject. And also the mystical perception of Neptune, meaning the boundaries between things give way and the mysterious oneness is perceived. You kind of wonder the extent to which Neptune is involved in the state of isolated unity, which is more fully appreciated by the master. Sometimes when I look at Neptune and Uranus, you know, after all, Uranus does come first and Neptune comes second. Kind of wonder whether that position of Neptune, maybe a visitor to our solar system altogether, doesn't give it a higher order in our particular second ray solar system. Yes, focus with the sun, Uranus and Neptune. Okay, full occult knowledge of Uranus. Full occult knowledge. That means esoteric experience, something that's very important when it comes to the factor of identification. This sign has frequently been described as the battlefield of the forces of materialism and the forces of light. You wouldn't think of it as one of the most material signs, would you? It is occultly regarded as one of the most material of the signs. But, okay, why is that? You know, it's because the ahamkara, or that sense of isolated selfhood, drives desire in the direction of matter and of all that will aggrandize and reinforce that limited sense of selfhood. So materialism is really a state of mind which is developed because of limited self-understanding. And when we think we are the object that we see and feel and experience in an immediate way, we have identified ourselves as an object in the dense physical body of the planetary logos and of the solar logos. That is the material body. A materialist is one who believes ultimately that reality is to be found in the dense physical body of the planetary logos, and ultimately, although it includes the causal body, in the dense physical body of the solar logos. One who has disabused himself of materialism knows that he is more essentially a soul, and then his desires are no longer for matter form. Matter form are repulsed, and then no longer are they desired, however much they may be used. for the sake of their own transformation and in the general good cause. So, you know, it's kind of interesting where these the forces of materialism, let's even call cosmic evil, a higher octave of that, or lower octave, however you might say, they came in where there was Imperial Rome, Leo. Okay. Rome itself has a strong Leo component, also Taurus. But when you look at Imperial Rome, there's no question about the Leo part of it. Came in at the period of the French kings. And the French, the personality nature of France is ruled by Leo. And these were great personalities that arrogated to themselves all kinds of rights, which did not divinely belong to them at all. They came in under Germany. Now, I believe it is Berlin, which has a strong Leo component. Might be worth one of those little searches, you know. I love searches, but only if they wind up somewhere. Yeah, there's Berlin with Leo. Leo involved. And Rome has Leo too. These great centers. Look at that. And both in the personality nature. And when you look at some of the German insignias and the importance of the sun as they conceived it, there's no question about the Leo. And this also comes back to the idea that Hitler had Saturn elevated in Leo in his personality horoscope, the highest planet, I guess, and in his soul horoscope, it was a dominating factor, says the Tibetan, who said he had not studied the personality horoscope of Hitler, although it does give a hint as to the conception chart occurring possibly 9 months before Hitler's birth in Taurus, being perhaps a Leo conception, and therefore a kind of Uranian chart, a mental chart in which Leo was emphasized. So you see how these places where egoism of the lower kind has emerged under those particular influences we've been discussing, how these places have been part of the battle against the forces of light. When we realize materialism to be a limited state of mind, born out of lower egoism, we realize why Leo, in its lower sense, should battle against the forces of light. It is occultly regarded as one of the most material signs, inasmuch as selfish desire for possession of material objectives can be peculiarly present in Leo, you know, for the sake of aggrandizement, wouldn't you say? The more matter of a glorious kind, the more the I, is aggrandized. And the display, there's that, you know, radiant Leonian word, and the display of the possessive spirit can violently control. In other words, more and more of me, a grander, more splendid, more radiant me. Look at, you know, I guess Napoleon was saved from himself by that conquest, but he really crowned himself. He wouldn't, emperor, he would not accept the crowning by the church because he put no church authority above himself. He had Leo rising. Again, we began to see that egoistic display, even though in a way he was larger than that, or at least could have been. Beethoven dedicated his heroic symphony, the Symphony of Hero, to Napoleon, but later undedicated it when Napoleon showed his truer colors or what he had become. So we do see how Leo can cause a lot of trouble, a lot of separation, and focus upon the glory of a lower light. You know, these French kings were splendid in their own way, but compared to the effulgence of the soul, they were like nothing at all. And so it was when comparing them to the monad, nothing at all. So there is the possessor spirit, which is aggrandizing, and it can violently control as the will is asserted over others. Let other forms exist, I rule, it is said of Leo in the lower mantra. Yet at the same time, the advanced Leo person, it's always a two-edged sword here, can function as the inspired spiritual sacrifice, sacrificing the lower ego for the higher sense of self. Sacrificing the lower ego for the higher sense of self. Spirit, you know, and soul. He is then sensitive, and that's the word for Leo, sensitive, and that brings in the Neptunian connection. He's then sensitive to world conditions and freed from personal desires, because the higher will controls. Higher will controls and blots out personality and its personal desires. So it's quite a drama for the Leo individual, is it not? And that Leo individual has a battle within himself. I think that battle is fought out in the fifth petal of the egoic lotus. Fought out in the fifth petal. I'll put it down. A battle. Oops, spell it right. Fought out in the fifth petal of the egoic lotus, because you can reach heights of egoism in that petal. And yet, if the king falls and realizes his impotence and that there must be a higher power than he, as a lower ego, is, then the path of aspiration opens up in the process of the fifth petal. And eventually, when the fifth petal is fully unfolded, corresponding to activity within the seventh petal, there's going to be the first initiation, or the birth of the true king, or the birth of the Christ, first as a babe, but eventually to be the true king of soul and even king of spirit. So it is a battle for the Leo individual, and the cleavages can be very great. Remember, the fifth ray rules the law of cleavages, and there can be such a cleavage when the first ray, fifth ray type asserts himself. DK says, in terms of psychopathology, that such people can make themselves untouchable, meaning you just can't get near them. The ramparts of separativeness are so built up. But if the requisite suffering occurs in the fifth petal of the egoic lotus, we have the transition from egoism to the defeat of the ego through much suffering, and the growth of a sense of perspective, which brings a view of the higher power into sight, and eventually a full following of the path of aspiration. One becomes a probationer, one becomes a true disciple, one becomes an initiate of the first degree. All of this can be developed there in that fifth petal. So, you know, DK gives us these different perspectives, doesn't he, on astrology. You know, we read conventional astrology, and certain thought forms are formulated, and they are passed from astrologer to astrologer, who repeat these thought forms as if they were gospel and so forth. But DK's insight is different. He shows us ways in which the signs produce that which we did not expect them to produce. They bring on developments and results which are different from what normal astrology says. He talks about, you know, the materialism of the Leo. Well, you don't normally think of it. He talks about the sense of pride of the Taurian, and the fact that love cannot easily be expressed, especially in the lower examples of those who are born in that sign. So many are the perspectives, and we have to read most carefully. We're just getting to the end there, you know, just about to the end of the 2 hours. Before individual man can achieve initiation, he must be fully self-conscious, mystically oriented, and occultly developed. Well, there is the sequence, the Sun, Neptune, and Uranus. Occultly developed, he has to have a very illumined mind, and he has to see the relations between things, and it's to see, you know, occult development, to see the relationship between things in archetypal form. Many things are related, but what are the archetypes which these relations reflect? And that Uranus confers. Uranus, I think, has a strong relation to the monadic plane as well as the logoic plane, because the monadic plane and logoic plane are planes of archetypes. They are two occult planes. When you consider the seven subplanes of the cosmic physical plane, the occult planes are the second plane and the first plane. And Jupiter is involved with one, but I wouldn't take Uranus with its sevenness away from the monadic plane, because there are seven great spheres on the monadic plane, and certainly it's related to the even higher archetypes of the logoic plane, where the designs of Shambhala are found. So, you know, we're on our way here to be fully self-conscious, mystically oriented towards the intangible, not towards form, but towards the subtler levels of being, which are not easily appreciated cannot be appreciated with the normal senses, and occultly developed, having that mind which sees the relationship between things and can fuse them together into designs which reflect the archetypes. And this the Leo individual can be. He must be aware of himself as he essentially is, a soul involved in form, which is itself developed and unfolded through soul activity over many, many millions of years. The form is going to respond to soul activity or consciousness. See, form responding to consciousness. As consciousness increases, the form refines and becomes more geometrically beautiful. He must be a developed mystic, sensing wholeness, sensing subtlety, sensing all kinds of impressions which escape the normal crude person, capable of pure vision. Now there is, well, that's a Neptunian combination. Neptunian combination, pure vision, motivated by spiritual intent. Neptune again, and able to perceive the uses of inherent sensitivity. We do have inherent sensitivity, and there's all kinds of subtle contacts which we are obliged to make in order to help fuse this world. He must also be the trained occultist, mentally polarized and profoundly aware of the realities, forces, and energies of existence, all the many diversified, distinct forces and what their scientific effect may be on different strata of matter form, free from the ordinary glamours and illusions, I guess there are higher ones, which color the reaction and life of the average man. Well, you know, it seems to me that this is really worth repeating. So even though we did go on here, I'm going to say that this will be the end of Esoteric Astrology, Adventure 92, Part B, page whatever, page something, 307, and almost 308. Yeah, but let's say page 307. And when we begin the next time, and I am happy to get this off to you, I certainly hope that it has recorded. It's quite heartbreaking, you know, when you record for an hour or two and suddenly it all disappears or never was recorded in the first place. We will go on here in the Leo chapter. And I will also put the date, which is the 29th of April, 13 to give a little bit of an orientation. And now I think the thing to do is let's all end with Great Invocation. Let's do that. And that will bring us just to the point where we need to be. So, from the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Thank you, everyone. This has been the end of Esoteric Astrology Venture 92. You know, of course, there are many of these one-hour segments involved in all of this, and some of them even have five parts. Just depends on the day. So we will continue here with page 307 at our next occasion. And I will call this to an end at the moment. All right. Very well, then.